session, which is an opportunity for the mayor and council to discuss topics that either determine we're going to make into ordinance. Topic for tonight is, and this is a work session, so basically everyone, you know, this is our first opportunity to talk as a group about short-term rentals, which I think first came up here in the late fall. So, what we have to determine tonight is what regulations or should be, created here in the town of Berlin regarding short-term rentals. You may or may not know, the council, as I've said a number of times, think that some reasonable and responsible way of regulating this growing trend, I think, is very necessary. And I think either banning them or doing nothing, both are irresponsible and just not what we should be doing in the best interest of the town. So basically, with the town administrator, working with the staff and planning and zoning, have been doing a lot of research, including, I know, several members of the council, into what other communities are doing, have already passed. And those communities are varying size. Some are like Berlin, some are resorts, some are in Maryland, and some outside of Maryland. So, personally, I think we have to, adopt, and tonight what we're going to do is determine what aspects of regulation that you would like to have proposed at a meeting 2 weeks from now, and at that time, if whatever you come up with will then be introduced, and then there'll be a public hearing where we can get input from the public as to what's been proposed. So our first, I guess the first thing is, so we can all agree on what we're talking about, is what definition should we create for short-term rentals? And the research that our folks have done, they've made a recommendation that we consider using all or any part of a dwelling unit to provide accommodations not to exceed 28 days to transient guests for sleeping or lodging purposes in exchange for a fee, to include those accommodations facilitated by an internet hosting platform. For short-term rentals, or also commonly called STRs, do not include bed and breakfast establishments almost anywhere. So let's, I guess, first discuss, is this the definition that we want to adopt in terms of what it is that we're going to discuss to regulate?
Where did 28 days came from?
Because it's what the other, Wilkes County and other municipalities have said, so it's not like we're trying to regulate summer rentals. Summer rentals that you can do for families, they hit with the summer. And then we've had them for ages, and they're not creating a problem. But at the same time, we're not trying to, most of them tend to be, a week and a half, or 2 weeks at the max. But that is at least something where there's a definition, and we're not trying to get into regulating people who are going to be here for the summer.
Dave, can you share some more of the 28 day?
Yeah.
Well, again, it was to be in conformity with Worcester County's ordinance that we do 28 days. Another consideration in that is the lodging tax that Maryland allows us to collect, just like they would for a hotel room, can be, I believe, it's up to shorter interval. 28 days is also the shortest month, usually February. So that's where that thinking came from, that 28 days would conform with what's around us.
Dave, does that mean that it's 28 days out of a calendar year that are available to be rented?
No.
Is this a 28 days in one step?
First step.
Okay.
So I could rent this 28 days and come back and rent another 28 days.
That's correct.
And rent another 28 days, and I could actually be there all summer.
True. That's right. You're not limited for that period at all.
Did you change the definition from short term to a long term rental?
Correct.
That's the only thing that's different.
It would be a regular rental license right. Then.
Any other questions or thoughts or suggestions regarding what we're defining as a short-term rental?
Dave, real quick, thing you saying we're defining.
Yeah, we got to know what we're defining before we can do all the other things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Can you give a quick explanation between R1 and R2, please?
They're both single-family residential districts. The only difference between the R1 and the R2, the R2, and it's the neighborhoods where there are smaller platted lots, so the requirements for setbacks are less in the R2 and than they are in the R1. R1 are generally bigger yards, bigger parcels. So in the R2, you could be closer. There's no difference in the front and rear setbacks. They're all 25 to the front, 35 to the rear. In the R2, you have a side setback where the sum is 20 feet. Smallest is 8 feet from the property line that you could have a house, where the smallest in the R1, their sum of 25 and the smallest is 10. So they don't vary by much. It's all in the setback.
And multifamily does not come into play in the R2?
Multifamily only comes into play in the R3 and the R4 districts. Okay. R1 and R2 are all to be one dwelling per lot, and they're all single-family dwellings.
Thank you, sir.
The licensing fee, are we following somebody else's pattern?
No, we talked about that. The county licensing fee was set at $200. Originally, it was a lot higher. And we looked at, I looked at the costs entailed with if someone was coming for a license for a short-term rental, the initial cost to inspect it for code and life safety, and to cover our costs on that fee, the licensing fee would be, or the application fee for a license would be $150, and then the annual license fee of $200 is the same as Worcester County's.
Well, this first thing, two different subjects there, and as far as the single R1 and R2 residential districts, the other thing that's been generally adopted most everywhere is that it must be a primary residence. In other words, if you own the property and you want to have a short-term rental, you also need to live there. The reasoning behind that is that the communities that didn't do that, they started a wave of purchases by non-resident property owners, bought up homes, and then converted them purely for rentals. They're not here to answer for it. What happens, there's little to no accountability for how that property is managed and what goes on there. And quite frankly, from my experience, non-resident property owners, they come here and want to make an investment and improve the community as one thing, but the communities that didn't foresee that, it's become a real problem. And I don't want people being bought out of their homes and move out of town because suddenly the home has more value as a rental property than it does as a home. We have been, and I hope we continue to be, a bedroom community for the rest of this century and hopefully beyond. And doesn't mean we certainly don't have a lot of activities and a lot of events, a lot going on. But at the end of the day, it's not a resort. And I don't think we're want to do anything that changes the very character and nature of our town. So do you have any, is there anyone that basically just objects to having R1 and R2 zones apply to this for permanent principal residences of the property owner?
I haven't heard nothing.
That's not the
matter. I agree with your definition, but my opinion is no. I don't want to think we're going to run
off. You want to know one more thing?
No, I think we need to go ahead and allow them, but monitor them.
Well, if you're saying,
my understanding of single family home is there is a single family home. If I occupy it or I don't occupy it, I still think I have the right to rent it.
I disagree strongly.
I understand.
Strongly. Yeah. Yeah. And again, here's the thing is, the basic premise is, as a community, we want to decide that only money matters, that people live here because they want to maximize their incomes from their ownership of property. I suggest that they may be in the wrong town. And it doesn't mean that some other town can be different, but I don't think people live here because they basically, as in some one nearby community, they're up all night and dealing with all kinds of noise and cars parking out in front of the streets, and there's nothing anybody can do about it.
I hope the police could.
And they can if it's not an ordinance. They can't do it because, here's the thing, that we're going to say, okay, we're basically going to have an additional police so that we can just be patrolling every neighborhood all night long to see if there's any noise or disturbance. The idea of this, so people know, the idea of this restriction is if you put this in place and you treat all, any particular zone the same, then a neighbor, either nearby or across the street, then can call if the limitations on short-term rentals are being violated. But if not, then...
Oh, I have no problem with the creates rules. I have no problem with that at all. I'm not saying I'm just saying we're good. Organize it, license it, monitor it. If it's about to be a problem, then we'll have to make some changes.
Well, why don't we address the problems up front?
I don't know that they're big as I haven't heard a lot. Well, I've only heard a lot from a lot of people on this side of the equation. So I'm still ready to learn and listen. But that's my feeling.
And Mr. Mayor, do I understand you correctly saying that you think the valuation of the property is going to be higher for a rental versus a single family?
I tell you, what's happened in some communities is that, non-resident property owners come in and buy up whatever they can to convert those homes into rentals.
But I wonder if the valuation really changes from somebody that's doing a long-term rental versus a short-term rental. You're still using a very similar format to calculate your return. So I don't know if it's really going to change. I understand where you're coming from, but I don't know if the valuation of the property is going to change by saying that if we allow this, that valuations are going to go so high that nobody can afford it anymore.
We don't regulate them.
It's a smart regulation, but I mean, I have to agree that I think that allowing people to rent their single-family homes is probably a good thing to do.
I don't have any problem with people renting their single-family homes as long as there's parameters and everybody knows what is appropriate for a small town and what is not.
And Dave, I have a question. Yeah. With the inspection fee, do we have the capacity between you and Carolyn to handle these inspections?
No, that would be we do for construction inspections. We use Middle Department Inspection Agency, and that was there. We asked them what their fee would be. They're currently doing it for Cambridge and Easton, so they had a fee in mind for when we would ask them, when we had an application, they would go out, you know, when we told them what the address was and assess the code, you know, if it was in code and was in life safety. So.
And what's their turnaround time for that?
I wouldn't know because we haven't started it yet. I don't predict that we're going to have an avalanche of these right at the beginning. I think we're going to have 6 to 10 right off the bat that I know of, and then I don't see it overrunning us. But normally, with construction inspections, the code says that we have to respond in 24 hours. So, say a builder called in today and they want a framing inspection, we would call it into them tomorrow, and it would happen tomorrow. So I don't know that this would happen that quick, but I would say within the same week, I could get somebody out there.
Could you confirm that with them, please?
Yeah, but I mean, they
we'd have to anticipate demand a little bit, but I would say that getting an understanding of their turnaround time or their anticipated turnaround time is going to be a big thing.
And the fee as well.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
And the fee as well.
Well, the
I think the fee is the one.
Well, he told me it would be $75. So, you know, and then we have other costs, administrative costs, and scheduling it, like, and we would have forms and, you know, online work to do also. But I really don't see it taking more than a few days because they're in town anyway. And that's the way they would tack it on to. See, they cover some of Wicomico County, Worcester County, Somerset County, Ocean City. So they're, a lot of times they're doing our inspections when they're running to and fro. So they'll say to us, I'll do yours. Like today we had two. I'll do yours on my way to Ocean City. Often they'll say, I'll do yours on the way back from Ocean City. They kind of give us their schedule. We call them at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I anticipate these being the same way. We'll, when I come to do that framing and that footer inspection, I'll do your rental unit at whatever street. But I can find out. It's going to be hard for them to tell me because...
What is a reasonable limitation? Because I think... I can see they have a point where they, you know, can't be like sitting around waiting for 10 days for an answer.
Yeah,
we can't give an answer until there's an inspection.
I would think a week, but I'll find out.
Yeah, just find out and just try to make, you know, make it as short a period of time as possible. It's got to be a cooperative. Everything depends on mutual cooperation here.
Mm-hmm. I think everybody needs to stay focused. We're talking short term rentals.
I agree.
Yeah. Totally different.
I agree.
You can still rent your house out year round.
Right. My question was about valuation, but
Dave, you said you would have about 10 ready to go now. Based on the definition of permanent residence, would those 10 fit within this definition?
I can only think of one that wouldn't.
One that would not?
Would not.
So they basically would not qualify under what we've discussed so far.
Right.
And that's out of the 10 that you would anticipate being ready to go?
Today, yeah.
Thanks,
all right. We've discussed the residential zoning for R1 and R2. What is your feeling about allowing short-term rentals in R3 and R4 apartment districts and in the B1, B2, and B3 business districts?
No, I'm probably regulating them all.
So in other words, I'm just asking if everyone is saying that if we're allowing them in R1 and R2, then we would be allowing them in the other areas with the same provisions and regulations.
Yep.
Okay. The next thing we're talking about here is parking. You know, at least one additional off-street parking space for each bedroom rentage shall be required over and above the parking required in the district the structure is situated. Does anybody have any thoughts on that?
I don't agree with that.
Yeah, what do you mean by the district?
Well, in this case, it would be all districts. In other words, that in that area, right now, if you're building something new, there's a certain amount of parking you have to have. But we do have existing cases where, let's say, a home has been divided into two apartments, and there's enough room there for two cars, but there are actually four. So they're ending out on the streets, and if the streets, wide and there's plenty of space, nobody complains. But in some cases, we're talking about streets that were once almost alleys, and that's where we had the problems last year with fire companies trying to get through to put out a fire and couldn't get down the street because the extra cars were in the street blocking their access.
The current parking code, for the residential districts, calls for two parking spaces per dwelling unit. So in other words, even if you had a four-bedroom home, you're just required to have two off-street parking spaces. That's your driveway or your side yard or your backyard. Now, if you're going to be renting out two of those four bedrooms for a short-term rental or Airbnb customer, just to use a trade name, you better have two more parking spaces. And some of the yards, as we talked about, setbacks are pretty tight, so they might not have dedicated parking. And one of the bigger problems we see in researching this and other areas is that, and we know we have a lack on some streets, as the mayor's alluding to, of off-street parking, especially when there's events. And on the weekends, when some of the restaurants and such fill up a little bit. And that's a problem for the neighbors who aren't doing short-term rentals because parking on the street is now jammed up, and we wanted to make sure off-street parking is available, and that's part of the licensing requirement.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying. If your primary residence and you're renting out two additional bedrooms, that's probably not a bad idea. If you're renting the whole entire property as a weekly, probably not necessary. This is my thought.
And then how are you going to prove that somebody has parking in the district the structure is situated? Are they going to have to provide proof of parking? So if you're trying to rent something and you have no space and you secure a parking space somewhere else, are you going to have to show proof of that?
No, that wasn't my intention with writing that. That was, you need one additional parking space in your district where your house is. That's
right.
That's on site.
I would say on site or proof of parking somewhere. Like if you don't have the space and you contract with somebody to have a parking spot, I don't see an issue with that.
Over and above the parking required in the district the structure is situated. So that's on site. I can change the wording.
You can change the wording, if you will, and all we do it before, whatever tonight's discussion ends up as a draft, so that we can review that before we actually have another meeting.
And again, this is not a draft. Okay. This is talking points, and that's what we're doing.
Okay. All right, how about the requirement for the size of each bedroom in a short term? That's where in this information, saying every bedroom occupied for sleeping accommodations shall contain not less than 70 square feet floor area, unobstructed other than by furniture for each occupant. The number of occupants shall not exceed the sum total of all occupants permitted in each bedroom of the structure. And then that's according to Chapter 6, Article 5, Housing Standards, Section 6.21. Floor space and occupancy. So basically saying that each bedroom must have a minimum of 70 square feet in size. For a person to maneuver.
Right. And that's no different than our current housing standards in Chapter 6 of the Town Code. Worcester County, and I don't, I, can't really speak as to why, but when they came out with their short-term rental ordinance, they made it 50 square feet. It's a tiny area. You know, think of a full or queen-size bed. You know, that's, what, 30, 35 square feet right there. It's ridiculous. So I didn't see any point in taking our standard even lower than we currently have it. In other words, if my home in town or your home in town, you're required to have 70 square feet, let's keep it the same. And then we know what code we're enforcing, and you don't have people turning a hallway closet into an alcove for a bed just because they can get another rental fee for the evening.
Anyone have any questions regarding the comment? Alrighty. Now, says here, the license that is then being issued by the town would have to be posted on the premises, and the license number shown on any form of advertising, whether it's internet or print or any other media, would have to be included in that advertising or the rental. Does anybody have any comments or questions regarding that?
And I will say that was included because we've been looking at this since, like I said, sometime in November, the end of the fall. It's a key for enforcement. When you find a unit that was occupied this way, especially the ones on the platform, and if you looked it up and found they didn't have a license, that's the first thing, that's the violation. You didn't advertise your Berlin short-term rental license number. That would be the first key, and that would be the first violation we could cite. And that was stressed to me by people with Worcester County, too. That's important for enforcement. And then I, looking at other ordinances around the area and around the country, they all seem to have that. The platforms themselves encourage that, like Airbnb and VRBO are two of the bigger names for rentals around the country. They stress that also, that they want their landlords or their hosts to advertise their license number, so they're trying to make sure that everybody's in compliance, and not only is the renter happy, but the platform's happy and the owner's happy. So they try to make sure everybody lists their license number wherever they're located.
Any other questions or discussions regarding the licensing? Okay, this also suggests that short-term rentals be subject to the state of Maryland's lodging taxes and as collected by Worcester County Treasurer's Office, and that this currently is set at 5% of the nightly room rate.
And I'll correct myself from earlier. I found it in my notes that the short-term rental tax in Maryland is it's subject up to 120 days, 4 months. So...
But we're saying, at least we're discussing not allowing short-term rental for 120
days. No, if you had a short-term rental up to 120 days, if it was a 120-day term or 28 days three times, you know, until you get to that 120 days, each night would be 5% taxable. Okay. And earlier I said it was 90. I correct myself. It's 120.
Any questions for Dave regarding the nightly room fee lodging tax? Next thing, the property owner shall maintain a record of the names, addresses, phone numbers, email, and fee paid per night for all guests, and produce the record upon the request of the town or the Worcester County Treasurer's representatives. So this is pretty basic stuff. Does anybody have any questions regarding that? Right. signs shall be permitted. Basically, these are not to be promoted as motels and are hotels. So does anyone have a problem with if someone's using a home for short-term rental, it still looks like a home? Anybody have a problem with that?
Nope.
Next is rental licenses are issued only to the property owner and are not non-transferable. Pretty basic. Anybody have any questions regarding that? The hosting of functions and events not incidental to the authorized overnight lodgers shall be prohibited. Can we give maybe a little better explanation of what that means, what it means, what it does?
You have a four-bedroom house, you have four lodgers there, but you decide you're going to hold the bachelor party on Friday night, and there's 35 people there. It's supposed to be for lodgers only. We know, and this is a hard one to enforce, because we know, say it was for a weekend gathering like that, or even for a wedding's in town, and, you know, someone's gotten the whole house or four bedrooms as a short-term rental, there are going to be people who, I'll sleep on the floor, I'll sleep on the couch, and, you know, you're just trying to avoid that, the parking problem. Possibly the noise problem late in the evening. So you can't, like I said, it's a tough one to enforce, but it would be one that, like Arnold's people, would have to use their judgment when they get called at 2 in the morning that there's 35 people in the backyard and they have a rental license, but only four rooms are available for rental. So that's just something to put in the ordinance. Make people aware, and that makes the landlord, the owner of the property, aware that don't book them for events, book them for just, you know,
overnight
guests, right?
So basically, if someone, to me, this is also the community's responsibility as well as the mayor, council, and police department. If someone doesn't complain, we're likely not to know about it. If the neighbors are fine with it, there's not a lot we can do unless the police happen to go by. And again, the idea is not to create a police state where they're going from door to door every night trying to see if you have any guests. That's not the way we want to live. But at the same time, it does put the responsibility on not only the license holder, but the neighbors as well. And if somebody can't pick up the phone, get on their cell phone and call the police, it must not be a very serious violation. The next thing was, if in fact, let's say somehow some gross violation, and somebody hosted a party there, lasted to the late evening, and the homeowner knew about it, or you know, and basically allowed it to happen, even if they didn't know it in advance, then that violation, the recommendation is that the license be revoked for up to 3 years. And I think that's what the Worcester County did?
Yes, sir.
Okay, the idea being, if you're going to go to all this trouble, protect your own investment in your license and as well as your property and your neighbors.
Right.
Okay, does anybody have any questions about that? Last thing here is that I'd like to recommend that maybe make a standalone ordinance. In our review of ordinances, we're going to the reading codes over the years is now that it's gotten so complicated. We don't want it to be complicated. So if we make a standalone ordinance, then it's something that can be easily found on a website and be easily reproduced and given to people. And you know, you don't have to go through pages and pages and pages of other ordinances that have anything to do with this. So is everyone all right with that?
Perfect.
Is there any other considerations or aspects of this that you'd like to bring up before a draft ordinance is put together for consideration at the next meeting?
I'd like to get some more input from the R1 and R2 homeowners.
someone is lives in an R1 and R2 district and does not want that to happen, they should come to a public hearing, and then we can judge based on what that number of people is. I don't know. I mean, I think that we have to use reasonable judgment. If one person objects, I don't think we can maybe out with the bathwater. But at the same time, if there is a concern among several and they've made some points that we need to address, then that's something else we can take into account and see if there is a way to address those concerns.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes?
I could just say, from my own experience so far, you know, people, you know, this, we've discussed this in public a little bit, that we were working on this. It truly is a 50-50 proposition right now. I'd be tough to put another number on it. You know, 50% of people in the R1 and the R2 see it as a property right if they want to do it, and 50% say, absolutely not. I don't want that on my street. So, and that's the breakout that I've seen so far. It's hard to put my finger on it because, you know, initially people, they understood, the public understood that we were going to ban it or outright it, you know, we were going to ban it outright, and that was just one thing that was mentioned among five other things, and that was never our intention. We had to come up with compromise, and that's where we are on this, I think.
Well, if we make everybody happy, I think we'll all pass out. but if we come up with some compromise that is as fair as possible and maintains the quality of life that people expect it for, and hopefully right. Enjoy most of the day and every evening, that's the best we can probably do. And, of course, we'll have a year's experience with it, and if it needs tweaking in the future because there's things we haven't foreseen, which means that these other communities, some of them have had it in place for, you know, most of these are relatively new, these regulations. So we'll learn along with everybody else. But if everyone...
I have something, Mr. Mayor. When I was going through and trying to take a look and sift through all the information and see both sides of the issue, I came across a presentation from Montgomery County that they did in back in the early 2010s, and it compares two cities, Portland, Oregon, and Nashville, and it discusses how Portland, in summary, kind of rushed through the ordinance process, and they believe that they had about 3,500 short-term rentals at the time that were on the market in the city, and only 448 complied with the ordinance. And then it cites Nashville side by side, and it says that they began the short-term rental discussion and got input from the community, and it lasted about a year, and they had about 2,500 short-term rentals that they believe were on the books, and their compliance rate was 1,200 of those properties getting the license fee. So, like my colleagues, I would like to hear a little bit more from the people, and outside of a public hearing, that can be a little intimidating for some people. And I think that a tabletop discussion, we would get a little bit more input. So,
basically, the public hearing we have to have as a matter of record.
Right, I agree.
But what you're suggesting is that we have an open format meeting where people can just talk and so forth. Which I see no problem with that. We do it with other subjects. But I do think, you know, from my own personal view, that we shouldn't wait a year to do something. I think we ideally need to have something in place relatively soon, so before the next season begins, everybody knows what the requirements are.
But I think I hear what you're saying. But I think with the budget process, that's going to really make it difficult for us to be able to get a chance to be able to meet with people. I think that we get through the budget process and then we pick up this discussion. We might miss this year's rental market, but we've missed the past seven or eight of them. So
it hasn't become a local issue here until the last couple of years.
And I hear the issue, but I hear both sides of it. Now I want to make sure that we make a good decision.
Well, I agree, but I just still think that we need to have something on the books before another rental season comes in place, because with nothing in place, I think that's an invitation to be taken advantage of.
And I hear you, but I think we're rushing it.
Well, yeah, I wish the whole world would slow down, but it's not. It's speeding up, if anything.
I'd love to hear from the public hearing. I mean,
yeah, that's what I like.
That's what I'm waiting for.
Yeah, let's
I'm waiting for the public hearing because I want to make sure that it's managed properly and it does not impede upon my peace, quiet, and well-being and the enjoyment of my place. But at the same time, if I'm a property owner, I think I have a right to utilize my property the way I see fit with limitations. So I just want to hear from the public. We can't hear from the public now, but like G said, that public hearing will give us more information. And after that, if it's deemed appropriate to take more time, like Zach has suggested, we would have that information. But I want to hear from the public first.
And Councilman Burrow, you mentioned something, and it also came to my mind when I was doing some reading, that there are some municipalities and cities that, to your point, make you go through and notify your immediate neighbors to let them know that, hey, look, I'm operating an Airbnb or I'm operating a VRBO. Like, that's part of some of these ordinances, and I'm afraid that we're going to miss it if we go too quickly.
Well, I still think we ought to hear from the public.
I agree.
You could, but what's the enforcement of it?
I see both.
Just to make sure that
make
sure it gets in the papers in addition to the advertising, is that there will be a public hearing on this at the very next Borough Mayor and Council meeting in March.
We got to draw an ordinance first, right?
And that's what the preview was tonight, so there's something
that's a little quick.
Mayor, you have to have a first reading of the ordinance, and then the next meeting would be the public hearing.
Here's the thing. I think if we have something on the books, we can get helpful information from the public. But just to ask everybody's opinions, we won't be any better off than we are now.
That's why I think we need to have ordinance.
Yep.
And then throw it out there and say, then we have a public hearing. We schedule it. Everybody comes in and tells me,
right,
can I have my problems? Hey, you can write us. You can call
personal
us. You can do whatever you want to do to get the information to your
email.
Picture representative. I wish more people did.
Yeah.
Between now and the public hearing, we'll hear everything for it. So we want to make some decisions, changes.
Because we can't do our job and public job too. Everybody has to participate.
Oh, okay.
And I think that's the thing is, and I don't think it's about who makes the loudest noises.
No.
It's about who makes the best suggestions that is as fair as we can be to property owners and the residents. And in this case, trying to put in reasonable and enforceable restrictions where they're necessary. Okay. Well, I thank everyone.
Thank you for your work, David.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank Jeff Fleetwood, too. He was a big help with this. And Mr. Gaspar.